This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today talking about the end of an era in Boston. Tomorrow, jockeys will mount their horses and race for the last time at Suffolk Downs, which straddles East Boston and Revere. It will mark the end of a Massachusetts sports institution that's endured for 79 years, dating back to the Great Depression. The recent decision to build the Boston area's first casino in Everett rather than at Suffolk Downs was the fatal blow for this horse track. WBUR senior correspondent Bruce Gellerman has been looking into the history of one of the region's most storied sports venues, and he's with us now. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Anthony.
So you found some great stories from the history of Suffolk Downs. People, for example, might forget that the Downs was a venue for lots of events over its lifetime. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, who knew that there were livestock auctions at the track, there were mock Indian battles there, and of course, concerts. There was Aerosmith. They played back there in 74. But Suffolk Downs is best remembered for when the Beatles played there in 1966. It was August, and one of the last stops in what would be their last live tour of the band in the world. And here's some bootlegged audio from that show. I bet you haven't heard this, Anthony.
What's your name? I'm John Levinsky. I'm from Marlin, Mass.
And you're going to leap up on stage right
yeah.
this moment?
That's right.
Okay, there he goes.
He's on stage, and he's got hold of John. He's got hold of Paul. George.
That's amazing, Bruce. I never have heard that. So a fan jumped up on the stage while they were performing.
Yeah, right. Could you imagine that? It was incredible.
What an interview. Yoo-hoo! I bet this is an exclusive. Oh, boy, it's all happening tonight, friends, in Boston. And they're taking him off right now. He's being bundled in a police car.
But of course, Bruce, Suffolk Downs is most associated with horse racing. So tell us something about that.
Oh, it's had an extraordinary, colorful history in thoroughbred racing. These horses that came to the track were incredible athletes. I think people remember Seabiscuit. If they don't remember it, they remember the movie. It was one of the nation's greatest racehorses of all time and an inspiring hero in the height of the Great Depression. Seabiscuit made his debut at Suffolk Downs just 5 days after the track opened in 1935. But there was War Admiral, there was First Fiddle and Whirlaway. They all won very big here. And Bing Crosby had a stable at the track.
Wow. So the Beatles, Bing Crosby, Seabiscuit, quite a history. Mm-hmm. Bruce, of course, for the workers in the racing industry at Suffolk, the loss of the casino license and the expected closing comes as a huge blow. I know you talked to some of them. What did you hear?
Well, it's the end of not just an era, but of their livelihoods. There are 350 people who are employed directly at the track, and there were another 1,500 who work there, owners and trainers and jockeys. Tammy Piermarini is the third winningest female jockey of all time. She's been racing at Suffolk for 29 years, and she recently said that the news of the closure made her sick to her stomach.
Where am I going to take my family? Where am I going to do well? I've been here the majority of my life. I made my living here. I have family. I consider the racetrack my family, my friends, my businesses here. And now I got to go as a journeyman, which is very hard. And, you know, I'm a woman. It's hard alone for a woman to be in a male-dominated sport. But never mind a journeyman who's in her 40s. And now I have to go someplace else to start over again.
Oh, boy, start all over again. Bruce, Suffolk Downs, of course, has faced some difficult times in the past. It's faced closure before and actually did close its doors for 2 years in 1990. Tell us why horse racing fell on such hard times.
Changing tastes. There were other forms of gambling came into play. There was off-track betting and just changes in society. People didn't like the slow pace of the track. The races are very fast, but there are 25-minute intervals between the races. You know, it wasn't until 1970s that the track got lights, so then people had to show up during the middle of the day, 6 days a week to bet, and that's not going to happen today. At the height of Suffolk Downs' draw, the four tracks in New England were pulling in more fans than the Bruins, the Red Sox, and the Celtics combined.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but since 2006, the track's been hemorrhaging money. It lost, something like $50 million.
So, Bruce, is there any hope that racing there will continue in some form, or is tomorrow it forever?
Well, it ain't over till it's over, as they say in baseball. There's been a placeholder application filed by the New England Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association with the State Gaming Commission. They pulled this off at the last minute, and it would allow the continuation of racing from 1 to 65 days next year if they get approved.
All right, if they get approved. So what's the next step?
There'll be a hearing on that application later this month, and they expect a decision by the middle of November.
All right, that's Bruce Gellerman, WBUR senior correspondent, reporting on the end of Suffolk Downs, where horses will race for what could be the last time tomorrow. Bruce, many thanks.
You're very welcome.
Time now for the Remembrance Project, The Lives of Those Among Us, our series of stories from writer Alyssa Eli about ordinary people who lived extraordinary lives.
Holly Ladd died on June 23rd in Newton. She was 59 years old. 3 weeks after her ALS diagnosis, she had already reviewed the prognostic literature and in her lawyerly fashion constructed her advanced directive with clear limits. Then over the next 2 years, the happiest of her life in some ways, she pushed the limits back again and again. Life before the diagnosis was full of high-power activism, heading the Boston Fair Housing Commission, helping to found the Boston AIDS Consortium, traveling through Africa teaching health providers to use state-of-the-art technology. She volunteered for the local Red Cross, running out to scenes of fires and floods. There was an emotional toughness. You could hear her eyes roll, said a friend, and a certainty that she knew many, if not all, answers. She kept her heart apart for her personal life. Her partner, their son, a few nephews and their children, a few close friends, and her beagle basset hound Walker, who had separation anxiety. Life after the diagnosis was involuntary adjustment and softening. First, she couldn't walk. I don't want to live in a wheelchair, she said, but did. Then she couldn't use her hands. If I can't feed myself, I don't want to live, she said, but did. With each loss, her capacity shrank, but her desire for life grew, and she expanded what she was willing to lose. She who had roamed Africa couldn't go to the bathroom alone anymore. Gestures of generosity towards Holly, the ones that arrive with acute illness and recede as illness becomes chronic, did not recede. Over time, they only increased. More and more people visited, and more often. Her nephew installed ramps in his house so she could come for Christmas dinner. Her son moved back to town so he could drop by every morning at 8 and lift her out of bed. Kids sat on her moving bed, charmed, and learned to use her eye gazer computer. The source of her imprisonment was the source of their magic. All the unremitting love astonished her. Before she lost the ability to speak, she recorded hundreds of messages that she could pull up on the computer with her eyes. Some were full of gratitude, some bantering, some about golf. Are you still hitting them wild to the right? Her voice would ask. There were also commands for Walker the dog, whose separation anxiety had been fully treated by her constant presence. Blinking once or twice to clarify, she kept pushing back the directives of when she wished to die. This amazed those around her. But she was bowled over by love, absolutely bowled over, and didn't want to miss a thing.
Writer Alyssa Eli remembering Holly Ladd, who died this past June in Newton at the age of 59. The Remembrance Project airs every week on Radio Boston. If you'd like to nominate someone for the series, go to radioboston.org for more information. And stay with us. Coming up, a case in favor of legalized gambling. Frank Fahrenkopf, former head of the American Gaming Association, now at Harvard, is with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.